So hello, everybody, and welcome to the first of our seven special module calls, the elite module calls on the extra modules that we have. Some of you are here for a third year, so you've seen this before, but in my opinion, it never hurts to hear things over and over again. And for some of you, it's the first time hearing this, but today's is on the brain and neurotransmitters. And we have a lot to offer in the module. I'm not going to go through everything that's in there, but what I am going to do is go through and share with you what's in there and what are some of the key points and what the best way is to get the most out of this. And then to answer your questions. What I find is that if we just send you out emails and say, go through this, here's your module, it's somewhat effective. It's more effective than saying, hey, there's these modules and you can go through them at your own. But then what I found is that if we actually have a call devoted to it, it gets you inspired, you get to see what's there, and it gets you more motivated. Who agrees with that? Like, you get more motivated when we're here to, yeah. Okay, so that's what we're here to do. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my screen, and then I'm going to just go through and show you what the different pieces are that are available to you in the brain and neurotransmitter module. If you have questions as we're going along, feel free to just, you know, raise your hand or open up your mic and don't interrupt me in the middle of a sentence, but, you know, say, hey, I'd like to ask you a question, and then we'll go from there. Is that fair? Yes? Good? Who's ready to learn about the brain and their neurotransmitters and how to best support that? I think it's always fun. All right, so here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to here, and I'm going to go to this brain home page, and I'm going to say share my screen. So it's the weirdest thing on Facebook. The only way I can share screen is if I widen it all the way. I can't do it when I have it narrowed. So I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to narrow it down. Ah, there you go. So I have more space. All right. So the brain and the neurotransmitters. You know, in psychiatry, there's a lot of attention paid to psychiatric disorders, anxiety, depression. And the most common approach is drugs, right? Anti-anxiety, anti-depression, focus drugs, Ritalin and things like that for focus. Memory, you know, Alzheimer's, they've been trying to find a drug that actually works for Alzheimer's, but they can't. So what we're going to do is really like demystify how your brain works, talk about neurotransmitters and how you can best support it with diet and lifestyle approaches. So when you, to get here, you basically, I can't do the right click. So it comes from the ERC home. I'll just start from the beginning. From the ERC homepage, if you scroll all the way down, you've got ERC Elite Modules. And the first one here is brain. So we've got seven of them: brain, bioenergetics, muscle and bone alignment, reproductive hormone health, cardiovascular detoxification, and shield, which is the immune system. We're not going to do them necessarily. There we go. So make sure your mic's muted so that we don't hear your background noise. Okay, so we're going to click here, brain, get started. All of these are open to you, so you can go through any of these at any point in time that you're interested or that you feel you have a need or you have a family member that has a need and you want to learn more about it. All of these modules have a getting started, mainly so that if we offer it, we don't, but if we were to offer it as a public program, that it would teach people how to, you know, whitelist my email address and all. The only thing on this page that might be useful for you is this. It'll say the action guide. You may or may not like, if you're somebody who likes to have a printed action guide to go through and say, okay, I did this, then this is good. Otherwise, everything else is in the program, and now that we have the little check boxes that you can do on the program, you may not need it. But it basically goes through, and when was this updated? Oh, January 4th, 2019. So yeah, last year when we did this. So there's five parts, the assessment, how your brain and nervous system work, what can go wrong, what are the food and nutrients and herbs that can help it, and then lifestyle factors that can help it. As you know, because you've been in the program with me long enough, I believe that when you understand how things work, you're more likely to follow through on it rather than do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. And we attract into this program people who are hungry for that information, who really want to know and understand, and that's why we do these modules. And I find that the compliance with making changes makes sense when it makes sense to you. So there's the first part, and this is just a checklist of stuff, and this is all on the site as well. So it's really not, you know, anything great shakes, but it's all on the site. But if you like to have it printed, if you have a three-hole punch notebook that you put it in, you can put it in there and you can check things off as you go along. It's totally up to you. So if I go back here, there's the five parts. We're going to start with assessment. And most of these modules in this advanced section are formatted similarly. Assessment. How do you know how things are going, where things might be going wrong? How does it work? What are the things that can go wrong? And then the diet, nutrient, et cetera, lifestyle things that can help you to support it. So we're going to start with assessment. Some of you already filled out this assessment because it's a duplicate of the assessment that's on our assessment section. Some of you haven't, so I would highly recommend that you start off this program by doing it. We're going to look to see, how are your moods? How's your behavior? Do you have any obsessive compulsive type of tendencies? A lot of people don't realize that certain things may indicate that there's a neurotransmitter problem, which could be a vitamin B6 or a magnesium deficiency. And it could be as simple as that, or it could be a fatty acid, or it could be something more complicated. Strange cravings, memory, focus. All of these are questions that we're going to answer when you do this assessment. So if you watch the video and we give you the slides and the transcript, so we go to here, it's basically the summary. You know, what are some of the assessment tools? And it talks about all the different ways that you can assess for brain and neurotransmitter imbalance. One is the paper and pen assessment. Actually, it's an online assessment that we've given you. But also, there are tests that can be done. Nutrients, some of you have done the OAT test, and some of you have done the NutriVal. There are functional tests to assess for memory and all that. There's genetics, and a lot of us know I have kind of messed up genetics for brain and neurotransmitter. So I have to work extra hard at the lifestyle and the diet and the supplement piece to make sure I keep my brain functioning at optimal, right? So some of you may have that and feel like, oh my God, and I'm never going to amount to anything, and I've got all these brain neurotransmitter things. But in reality, I'm loaded with anxiety and depression and memory problem genes, right? So if I didn't really work at my diet and my lifestyle, and as I found when I was in my 20s and I wasn't working at that I started to have really bad brain fog and couldn't follow, even after having been valedictorian in high school. Suddenly I'm in a job and I can't even, you know, remember this person's name, let alone what I'm supposed to be doing with them. So there's a lot of hope for it when you embrace the things in this module to help you to rebalance things. So then there's ways you can get labs. These are only through practitioners, but we have these various tests on our site. So any of the tests that would be needed, you have access to when you go to our lab testing. And then there's the different places that you can get them directly through. So we go through this and we talk about this in this video. This video is about 13 minutes long. We try to, especially in the brain and neurotransmitter section, keep the videos relatively short so that you can maintain focus and attention. But also, if you have a busy life, sitting down to an hour and a half video may feel exciting because you're going to learn a lot, but then it's like, how do I fit this in to my busy life? So we're trying to keep the videos shorter in these sections. Assessments. So you fill out the brain and neurotransmitter assessment. Some people prefer to do the download a PDF and fill it out by hand and then score it, and others prefer to do the online assessment. And usually we have a link to the PDF there in case you change your mind when you get here. But basically there's lots of questions in terms of sections. There's general brain dysfunction. There's questions that might indicate serotonin, or dopamine. These are neurotransmitters that we'll talk about and you'll learn about in the module. And you get to take this test to see where, if any of these might be impacted for you. And then you get scores. And I highly recommend that once you do those, that you put the score in your master tracker. And after tomorrow, I may have a new, easier way for you to track those things. Keep your fingers crossed. I'm talking to somebody who has an amazing app. And then there's a progress journal if you want to do it. Again, we set this up so that if we were to offer this to the public, to people who aren't already in ERC, that we could keep track. But if you want to do that, fill out the progress journal and get support, you can. Okay, so part two. Any questions on that? It's just pretty basic. It's pretty, you know, where are you at? And we always like to know where are you at and then where are you going, so we know how to create the path to get you there. So,
Dr. Rita Marie?
Yeah.
Quick question on that.
Yeah.
I was actually typing this into the chat, but I did the assessment, and when I went to the health scorecard on the master tracker, I noticed there isn't a section for that particular assessment to put
really?
The scores in. I couldn't find it. No, I just went and checked because I know the assessment's there itself, but not in the health.
Not in the spreadsheet. Okay.
There's a couple of them that are that way.
Oh, yeah, I know some of the more like esoteric ones like Candida, because it was harder to put those in there. But would you make a note for me, Angelica, to check into that and see what we could do, and maybe we can get Frances to add that. She's going to love me every time I have her add some new section to the master tracker. She has to go through individually each of your things to do it. That's why we're keeping my fingers.
There is a brain and neurotransmitter on the health scorecard.
Is it?
I didn't find one in mine.
It's underneath hormone and gland assessment.
You in there?
I'm in there.
Yeah. You see it? All right. We'll come back to that at the end. Okay. I'll go through this and we'll see if we can open up yours to see if it somehow got deleted out of yours when she was doing the edits. But I thought it was. I thought that was one of the ones. I know there's not the leaky gut one isn't in there and the candida one. But I know that I thought.
Well, go ahead and go on. I'll check it myself and see. But I'm pretty sure it's not there.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Can you scroll back to the brain specific test list?
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you if there were any of those that you like in particular, or how do we distinguish one?
It's like a list.
Yeah. Which ones are good for what, or?
Yeah, and I go through that in there, but I'm not a big fan of the neurotransmitter test per se, just because there's a lot of evidence that the level that comes out in the bloodstream, you know, or in the urine is filtered out in the urine, because I think it's a urine test, does not reflect what's in the brain, just because so many of these neurotransmitters are active other places, like dopamine, serotonin.
Scroll to the list of all the tests. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. So this is their neurotransmitter testing. So that's one that I'm not, I'm not really crazy about. I've done this neuroscience. The problem, I'm not a big fan of really any of these, and I do talk about it in there, and I hate to say that, but I think that a lot of them are geared towards companies that also sell supplements, and they do a very prescriptive, you've got this, you need to take this, you have this, you need to take this. And I've seen a lot of people over the years who've done those tests with other practitioners, and they've come in and they've taken the supplements, they haven't seen change. I prefer the more functional tests, which would be organic acids and also amino acids, which gives you the precursors and the vitamin minerals. So like NutriVal and oat test is what I prefer. I'm not a big fan of any of these actually, but I did put them in here just for completeness.
Okay, that was really my question.
Yeah, yeah. probably should update that to take them out, but
I don't think I need to do anything any different than I'm already doing.
No, I don't think you do. I don't think you do. I just think you get confusing information and confounding information. I've seen people where it looked like their serotonin was high, but they were having symptoms of it being low, and maybe it was because it was low in the brain, but high in the digestive tract, right? And that's why it was showing up. I know that there's some recent research, and I need to go back to a seminar I went to a couple of months ago, where they were using the neurotransmitter testing, not so much for neurotransmitter, but for the health of other areas of the body and what it meant. And there was a chart I need to go download and figure out, but that's the use I've seen for it that made more sense than this. But what I really prefer is the organic acid, the NutriVal, because it gives you the idea of the nutrients. How are your B vitamins? B6 is super important. And the amino acids. So you know, maybe I don't have enough tyrosine to even make the norepinephrine and dopamine. Maybe you don't have enough tryptophan to make serotonin. And those things help me a little bit better. That's just my opinion.
Okay, thanks.
Again, because I've had so much, so many people who've done them, and then they don't actually see much in the way of results. Okay, so that's good. That's a good question though, Jay. All right, so next one is, how does it work? This is again, I don't go into the massive detail I do in the practitioner training, but it's fairly detailed. And I'll show you what the slides look like. So what are the different parts of the nervous system? How does it work? The nerves and then the synapses, the space in between. And when we talk about neurotransmitters, we go through in detail here what they are. They're little molecules that communicate from one nerve to the next. And some are excitatory and some are inhibitory. And when they're working in symphony and working properly, we have the right nutrients to support it, then your brain functions properly. Yeah, it's normal to get depressed or sad, I would say, when things go crazy in your life. It's normal to get excited when there's excitement in your life. But it's when things are misfiring, then we end up with symptoms like chronic depression, even though your life looks really good. Or anxiety, where, there's folks that get extremely anxious if any little things go wrong, and that's part of the programming in the nervous system. And the genetics play a role in here, GABA being one of the biggest inhibitory neurotransmitters, meaning calming you down, helping you to sleep. That can be deficient in people with a GAD SNP. I have about 8 of them. So I have to really work at not getting overly excited because I have that tendency, but I've worked on the nutrition and the nutrients and all that, and it's all possible. Neurotransmitters, what are they? We talk about that. We talk about the different ones. I talk about some of this is acetylcholine, and how it works. Like, we have these little vesicles, and they create these little neurotransmitters, and then they get received at the next nerve, and the next nerve says, oh, this is what I need to do. So they're basically instructions from nerve to nerve. And again, this is quite a long set of presentations, so I'm not going to go through every little detail, but I'm happy to answer your questions as I do. So we talk about the major neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine, GABA, glycine, the excitatories, glutamine, acetylcholine, and norepinephrine. And there's more, but these are the main ones. And these are the ones that those tests actually do tests for, most of them. I find there's a book called The Edge Effect by Eric Braverman that has some really detailed testing in it. And I highly recommend, if this is an area that you're very interested in and really want to dig even deeper on, that you take some of the tests in there. I found it very telling when I kind of know what these symptoms are of various neurotransmitter imbalances. And I remember having my son take the test when he was in middle school and freaking out every night that he was going to die in his sleep. He was just anxiety and getting stomach aches over it. And I started to look at, which neurotransmitter might be most out of balance. And it was really clear, that from doing the Braverman test, which is even more detailed than the one, the shorter one that I gave him, it was like GABA, you know, he had a score of 30, whereas the other, he had a score of 2 or 5 or 10. So we worked at some of the things in the Braverman book, you know, certain foods that are going to be helpful to support GABA production, certain nutrients, et cetera, and give him homeopathics. And he, within a very short period of time, he no longer was afraid of dying every night, right? Because we were able to balance it. And the homeopathic, I think, played a big role in that as well. And the actions of the different neurotransmitters, for those of you who want to geek out, are you going to memorize these? You know, don't waste your time memorizing them, but read them and see what makes sense in terms of me, what might be out of balance if you're having any of these issues, or to be able to recognize in people in your family. And then I go into a little bit of the biochemistry. You know, I like to get geeky and talk about the different kinds, like serotonin and what's the monoamines? Yeah. So like serotonin and dopamine, these are all part of the monoamines family. So talk about, like, whenever you hear about a drug, right? You hear about people who are depressed or have OCD or anxious, they'll be given, say, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, SSRI. And there's a bunch of different drugs that are in that category. Now, if you have been someone who's taken something like that and you found, wow, it really helped me with depression, then you can assume that there's a problem with the amount of serotonin. So basically what those uptake inhibitors are doing is when that neurotransmitter gets passed across that synapse and onto the next one, there's some degrading, that you degrade it into its raw components and then recycle. And if you don't have enough, the approach, the medical approach with drugs is to, don't do this reuptake, just, you know, reuse it. So it inhibits the reuptake. And so it continues to be used, but like air in a room that doesn't have new fresh air coming in, right? After a while, the oxygen's depleted. After a while, that air is not good anymore. Maybe you can recycle it a couple of times, but you really don't want to be breathing stale air for the rest of your life. And similarly here, so people who take SSRIs find that they work really well at the beginning, and then after a while they don't work as well and they need to add more because you're not addressing the underlying deficiency. So what we like to do is help your body make more of the serotonin or whatever it is that's determined that you might be off. So that talks about serotonin and some of the serotonin imbalance symptoms, how it's made. Again, this goes into a lot of detail. If this isn't of interest to you, you don't have to memorize it. But I find that when you kind of get a sense of why some of this works, like tryptophan, right? It's an amino acid. It's an essential amino acid that we need to have in the diet. And if we don't have enough of it, or we have a genetic issue that causes us to need more, we can't make 5-HTP. And 5-HTP is the precursor to serotonin. Some people take tryptophan and it works really well. Some people need to take 5-HTP. There's a more advanced pathway here that the tryptophan doesn't always go down the pathway to serotonin. It could be shifted off, and that's why I like the OAT test, because it looks at one of the metabolites that gets produced if this pathway isn't working right. And so if you're a person that's in that way, we may have to give you 5-HTP rather than tryptophan. I generally, when I'm helping people with supplementation for this, will go with the 5-HTP just to be sure. We don't want to give somebody too much serotonin. There's excess serotonin symptoms, right? And then serotonin then gets converted to melatonin. But critical in here is having enough vitamin B6. So if any of you have spoken to me and have said, you know, recommended vitamin B6 or P5P, it's a supportive nutrient in this pathway, okay? B5 from serotonin down to melatonin. So maybe you have plenty of B6, but not enough B5. A lot of times when we're supporting people with adrenal problems, we'll ask them to take extra B5 because B5 is important for creating the cortisol and some of the other steroid hormones, and B5 can also help this pathway. So I'm a big fan of giving the body a precursor as early on as we can versus like melatonin, right? So in this particular case, if I suspect that somebody's low in melatonin, maybe temporarily we'll try melatonin, but I'd rather say, why isn't there enough melatonin? What's the cause of not enough melatonin? Is it because there's not enough tryptophan? Is it because the pathway to convert that tryptophan down to the melatonin is broken? Is there not enough B6? Is there not enough B5? Is this making sense? Am I going into too much detail? No? That's easy for you to say, Angelica. Anybody else? Is this okay, this level of detail? Yes? No?
This is good stuff.
Okay, good. And the more you hear it, the more it sinks in. So you might have heard this last year. You might have read through it. But the more you hear it, the more it sinks in. Because we always want to determine the why. You know, not just give you something. And yeah, temporarily, let's just get you sleeping. Try whatever you can try. But let's see where the pathway is broken. And that's why I like the functional test, Jay, better than you just don't have enough serotonin. Okay, why?
So, for example, on my Dutch test scores, typically show low. I think they measure melatonin, don't they?
They do measure melatonin. They also measure 5-8.
Mine consistently are on the low end. So I'm thinking, scroll back one slide. Yeah, so I've started taking a little bit of melatonin at night for that reason, but now I'm thinking maybe I should be trying tryptophan and 5-HTP instead.
I usually like to start with that instead. I would start with 5-HTP. Tryptophan, you know, you could, but again, you know, you need folate and niacin and other things to convert it. So you could start at the top and go, let's try tryptophan. If that doesn't work and help. So here's, first of all, you've tried the melatonin and it's helpful? You find it helpful?
I can't tell.
Can't tell.
It's not like it puts me to sleep immediately or anything.
But do you sleep?
Not that I'm really having a sleep problem. I was just trying to get my levels more in balance.
Get them in balance. Okay, so it's not something you can tell that with. And you haven't had a Dutch test since you started taking it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So there's a couple of ways to approach it, right? You know, you can start, since you're not having serious sleep problems with it, and it's just showing low, it is good to have the melatonin at optimal levels, because in addition to helping with deep sleep, it's also cancer protective. So if you know, you just want to have these things at the levels that they're supposed to be, and if they're not, why? So if you were to take tryptophan and it worked, then we know that this pathway is working, right? And we know that probably all of those pathways are working if you took tryptophan and it got your melatonin up. But if you didn't, if you took tryptophan and gave it a fair trial and it didn't, then you can go backwards down this way. And you can go, okay, let's try 5-HTP, right? You can't supplement serotonin or N-acetyl serotonin. So the only choices are tryptophan, 5-HTP, or melatonin. So there's the approaches could be, try the melatonin, did that work, get your levels to where they should be. Now it's like, okay, let's try something more natural earlier on. Then you could go backwards, you know, do the tryptophan or the 5-HTP for a while. The tryptophan is modifiable via diet. So if it's low, it could be that, and these pathways are intact. So if tryptophan works, you know these pathways are intact. So if it's low and you take tryptophan, then you got to look at the diet. You got to look at, am I breaking down the tryptophan, the protein in my food so that I have enough tryptophan? Am I taking foods that are high enough in tryptophan and then utilizing it? So you see where you test
it. 5-HTP is pretty pricey stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and tryptophan isn't. So
I'd rather take the tryptophan than plus all these other cofactors off on the left-hand side.
And you're taking most of those cofactors, aren't you?
Taking all of those.
You're taking all of them, right? So then you might, the tryptophan might be the way to go. To try it that way.
Folic acid. Well, what's vitamin B3? I can't read that.
That's vitamin B3. Yeah. Folate, which is B9, B3, which is niacin, B6, which is pyridoxal triphosphate, potential with the best.
Yeah.
So it's basically all your Bs. And so, folks, this is where folks who have not the privilege of being in ERC or vital or, you know, learning all about eating whole fresh foods. They're eating the standard American diet, which is depleted in B vitamins. So no wonder they're depressed. Right? No wonder people can't sleep. So I like to start with, let's clean up the diet and clean up the lifestyle so that we can supply this stuff. And then, of course, you look and say, well, in the genes, there are some genes that interfere with your ability to absorb these. And I don't know if you have that. I don't remember. I can't remember everybody's genetics. But if you look in the genetic detoxification report, towards the back, there's a section on nutrients, and there is one for P5P. And I've seen a number of people who are impaired or potentially impaired there. Yeah. Good questions. Dopamine. You know, if you've been someone who has, or you have family members who have been reaching for things like marijuana to calm down, or to have that, you know, feeling, or have drug addiction problems, a lot of times it's a dopamine deficiency. Dopamine is super important in that pleasure reward system, right? So people who are dopamine deficient tend to just say things like, I just used to get pleasure out of this, but I don't anymore. You know, I love to play golf, but it just doesn't give me any pleasure anymore, right? And that's a lot of times dopamine deficiencies. Dopamine's precursor neurotransmitter, or amino acids, are phenylalanine and tyrosine. Phenylalanine is one of the 9 essential amino acids. Tyrosine is conditionally essential. So if you have plenty of phenylalanine and your B12 folate iron status is good, you're going to make tyrosine. So sometimes we supplement people with tyrosine directly because they have impairments here, right? The long-term goal would be to get, if you need symptom relief, like depressed and suicidal people need to get out of the depression and suicide tendencies, right? So it's help, throw the life preserver in. I love Tom O'Brien's analogy there. Throw in the life preserver, but don't leave them in the water hanging on to the life preserver. You got to fish them out, right? And then you have to fix why did they fall into the water in the first place, right? So that's what we're trying to do here, is to really help you to get to the root. So phenylalanine to tyrosine, but the cool thing, tyrosine is important in so many pathways, right? So again, your B vitamins, sometimes just getting people on better B vitamin status, you know, more whole foods cures their depression. I remember a lady came in to see me, this was like 10 years ago, and she'd been on antidepressants for a long time and they weren't working anymore. She didn't want to, they'd already increased her dose, wasn't working. They wanted to add a second antidepressant. She didn't want to do it. She was like, what else can I do? So I sat her down and I just started looking at her diet. And I talked about the grains and the breads and the things that were depleting her B vitamins and some potentially allergens. And I talked to her about testing and all this. And it was right before Christmas. I remember this. And she said, well, you know, probably I'm not going to do much of anything over Christmas because it's, you know, major lifestyle changes, but let me come back and we'll figure out the testing in January. She comes back a month later and tells me, well, I actually did make some of those changes. I went gluten-free, I got off the breads, and I didn't do any of the Christmas cookies. And she said, I've reduced my dose of my neurotransmitter already. Is that cool? Just those simple changes. Now, for everybody, it's not like that, but just those simple changes for her made a huge difference, because now she's getting her B vitamins, right? Now she's helping her gut to be able to absorb better, because with the gluten, if she had a gluten intolerance, you're not absorbing things, right? She has a leaky gut. So in a month, she was able to reduce it by half when the doctors were trying to get her to increase it. So it's really kind of cool. And then again, there's the B6. So tyrosine goes down to thyroid hormones, as well as adrenal hormones, as well as dopamine. So it's a really important neurotransmitter. And if your test shows that you're low, let's look at the status of all these other things. Well, for tyrosine to go to thyroid, you need enough iodine. You also need magnesium and zinc and some of these others as well. And you need to have a good intact pathway for T4 to T3, selenium, manganese, iodine, right? But we need to have good energy, and sometimes what we perceive as depression is actually low energy, right? Because the energy function, the cells in the brain just don't have enough oomph because of the thyroid. So it's really, depression is one of the key symptoms of thyroid imbalance. And this is one of the connections. And DOPA, it goes to DOPA. You've ever heard of Parkinson's disease? Who knows somebody with Parkinson's disease?
My grandfather.
Your grandfather, okay. So L-DOPA is one of the drugs that they will give to people with Parkinson's disease.
They do.
They did? Yeah, it's very common. Now, there is an herb called Macuna purens, that actually contains some L-DOPA. So that can be helpful for some people. Again, we're looking at this B6, right? B6, B12. The B vitamins are super important. So to throw something at a problem, like, okay, let's just start with B vitamins, right? If you're not sure yet where you're at and you're having some of these neurotransmitter things, getting a good B vitamin supplement can be super helpful. Now, I'm not a big fan of just throwing things at without looking for the root cause, but it can get some symptom relief.
The other thing I've been supplementing with is ginkgo and gotu kola.
Mm-hmm. And those support adrenal function. And ginkgo supports extra blood supply to the brain. So sometimes it is a blood supply problem. You don't get enough blood to the brain, so therefore the brain isn't getting a lot of these nutrients.
That's my eye problem, is blood supply.
That's your eye problem, is blood supply. Have you done ginkgo for that?
Have I done what?
So you said you were doing ginkgo?
Yeah, I was taking it, not a lot of it, but... Yeah.
Yeah. So a couple of things with ginkgo. Personally, I can't take it.
You're in a powder, so yeah.
It just brings more blood supply in and allows it to get in. I can't take it. I get a severe headache if I take even something with a little bit of ginkgo. And I think because it opens up the blood vessels to help bring more blood flow. And if I already have plenty of blood flow to my brain and I take ginkgo, bleh, my head explodes and I get a headache. And I only tried it I've tried it a few times when I was in school and studying and I needed to study for a test and I wanted to, you know, really improve my brain function, and it always backfired. So, but ginkgo does increase the blood supply, which then by default will increase the nutrient flow in that area. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. And then the dopamine and goes to norepinephrine and epinephrine, noradrenaline and adrenaline, which are the adrenals. So this tyrosine is super important for adrenal function, for thyroid function, and for, you know, the motivation and the, you know, the dopamine type of things. You know, and some of the deficiencies, well, apathetic depression, like I said before, I used to like that, but nothing ever makes me happy anymore. Lack of energy, lack of drive, easily bored, lack of focus, inability to concentrate, and ADD. And one of my kids, he was always the digger, right? Everything. Comes home from school once, and I think he might have been in eighth or ninth grade. He goes, "Mom, I think I have Parkinson's." They're like, "Oh, what makes you think so?" But with the internet, right, there's so much stuff they can look up. He goes, "Well, you know, I'm always bored." And that's what he would always say. "I'm bored. I'm bored. I'm bored. I can't focus when they're talking about stuff, you know." And I think those were the main ones. But he was looking at it, and I'm like, "Honey, I don't think you have Parkinson's. But I do think you have a dopamine deficiency based on some of the other symptoms he was having." And I'd been saying that. Anyway, long story short, we addressed him from a nutritional standpoint. He was short on B12, turned out. One of the things he was low in, we did a methylmalonic acid, and he was low in B12. And once we got him on the B12, it seemed like so much of this other stuff cleared up. So he was having some trouble with some of those pathways. And if you look here, where was the B12? Oops, where'd we go? Right? B12, right? So he was having difficulties converting his food phenylalanine into tyrosine. He still comes to me. And one time it was diabetes. I think I have type 1 diabetes. Why? I'm hungry all the time. I'm thirsty all the time. And I'm peeing a lot. Oh, tell me more. What are you doing? Well, turned out he was doing CrossFit for an hour and a half a day and playing rugby for 3 hours a day. Yeah, I think you get a little more hungry and thirsty and you're drinking a lot. And he didn't have type 1. When he came home, I tested his blood sugar. And after eating lunch, his blood sugar was 95. I'm like, yeah, I don't think you have diabetes. But there's so much information on the internet that you can get overwhelmed. And white coat syndrome, which used to be something that you get in medical school. Every time you hear about a disease, you're like, I have that. Oh, I have that. I have that. Now it's happening, white coat syndrome, to everybody because it's the internet. I have this symptom. Oh my God, I may have. The last time, most recently, I think I have a nerve degenerative disc problem. He's 25. I'm like, okay, tell me why. Again, we went through this whole thing. It turned out he, and I'm asking him about his back and all this, it turns out that his fingers go to sleep sometimes, right? I'm like, okay, what are you doing? Well, when I'm at the keyboard for too long and blah, blah, blah. I think it might be more like a carpal tunnel, or it might be, you know, so it can get dangerous when you start to read all this stuff and go, oh, I'm gonna die. So anyway, GABA is an important one, and GABA is, there's a, an enzyme called GAD, glutamic acid decarboxylase, that converts glutamic acid, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter, to GABA, which is a calming neurotransmitter. So people who have this SNP will tend to make less GABA. And you do have to be careful if you have that SNP to go slowly with something like glutamine, which is often used for leaky gut. Doesn't mean you can't take it. It just means you have to be careful that your body's not taking the glutamine, converting it to glutamate, and then not making GABA. But a lot of times people have taurine. This is one of the, okay, where is it? Taurine is the immediate precursor to GABA, right? So when, if you're having trouble with, you know, anxiety, not falling asleep, but also digesting fats, taurine is also part of the bile, taurocholic acid, part of the bile that helps you to digest fat. So there's all kinds of things that you can do with this. Yeah, and I think that this in here, there are some people who will do the opposite, will go back to the glutamic acid and not go to the glutamine. And I think that's why some of them can't take it. So it's not everybody. And then again, the GABA, this is all part of your neurotransmitter assessment. It's just, what are some of the symptoms? That's just a picture. And I talk about that more in there in the brain. So the summary is, nutrition is super important. We've seen, especially B vitamins, neurotransmitter precursors are the amino acids, and also function of your digestive tract is super important, like stomach acid. Are you making enough stomach acid to take the protein and break it down into the right amino acids? And then do you have the B vitamins and some of the other factors to convert them to what you need? Ta-da. Anything more on that? Yeah, Jenny.
Why does exercise have such a positive impact on dopamine? Is it because of blood flow, or is it more complicated than that?
That's a good question. And I don't know that it's ever been fully defined. I know it helps with BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. So it has to do, it helps that, which helps to repair parts of the brain. And I know that oxygenation is huge. Bringing more oxygen flow to the brain is super important. It's been found to be more effective than some of the medications at helping, like mild depression, not in severe and suicidal depression necessarily. But there's been so many studies that show that exercise, consistent exercise, is actually more effective than the medications.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why we're so critical. We're so, what's the word? We emphasize so much the importance of exercise. We'll talk about some more information on that in part 4 and 5. Okay, so that's basically it in that one. Any other questions about how it works? You'll watch this, you'll learn it, you'll forget some of the pathways. That's okay. None of us remember them all. This is longer. This is 46 minutes. So you might want to cut it in half and watch it part in part. But you're going to get a lot of information, and it may clear up something. You know, it may confuse you a little bit, and you can always come and ask me questions. Kind of like when my son started reading about it, he got more confused. Oh, I have this, I have that, I have the other thing. Okay. So the next one is part 3, which is what can go wrong. And there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And so we're looking at each of these kinds of things: depression, sluggishness, anxiety, lack of focus, memory issues, bipolar, schizophrenia. And just because you maybe have trouble remembering where your keys are doesn't mean you're struggling with Alzheimer's, right? But if you're having trouble finding your keys and you walk outside and you get confused and you get lost in your neighborhood and you're getting a little aggressive, right? And you're like angry and irritable, it could be early signs of Parkinson's, of Alzheimer's, right? So any one of the symptoms doesn't mean that you have the disease, but it's a component, it's a compilation of the different symptoms. And I you know, a lot of doctors are reluctant to diagnose somebody with Alzheimer's, and you know, I totally understand it. But, you know, I've been there with family members who have all of those symptoms, and they're going, oh, no, it's just old age. She's 85. There's other 85-year-olds that are walking around fully functional. Why does she have this? What's going on? Why can't she remember at the end of her sentence what she said at the beginning of her sentence so she couldn't finish sentences? You don't think that's abnormal. So some doctors are, you know, some of the older ones, they're like, it's just old age. It's just old age, right? Whereas there's some things that can be done to help support people in getting that memory back and not losing it in the first place. There is a lot of evidence, and I know Dr. O'Brien talks about it a lot, the connection between gluten intolerance and early onset Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Typically, we see Alzheimer's coming on in the older population, you know, in the 70s, but could come on earlier because there's a whole bunch of factors that contribute to it. There's a whole bunch of factors that are imbalances. And if you've ever read the book, The End of Alzheimer's, an excellent book, and if you have any family members or family history even of Alzheimer's, it's totally worth reading. And he talks about the fact that so much trials and so many drug trials and nobody's able to find the cure for Alzheimer's. Nobody's able to find one drug that will help, or even a half a dozen drugs that will help, because there's so many mechanisms at play. He identified 36. And he said, think about your roof. If you've got 36 holes in your roof and you plug up one, is your roof still gonna leak? Probably, right? If there's 36 holes in your roof and there's maybe half a dozen of them that are big and the rest of them are little pinholes and you plug up those six, hey, you're probably going to get some good relief. So we have to think about this Alzheimer's issue, this brain starting to lose its memory in that way. And we can protect ourselves really early on. Don't do the gluten, especially if you have the genetics there. If you have the Alzheimer's genes, don't do that. Be careful with the saturated fats. You know, too much of the animal fats can trigger the, you know, if you have the APOE4/4 thing or even 4/3. So it's things like that that we have to be aware of, and it's in our control. Now, this is a short one. What I love is that every choice we make matters to the outcome in our health. Every choice, like all day long, I would just pay attention one day to how many times you have to make a choice. Do I get up now? Do I sleep, you know, snooze the alarm 10 minutes? Do I drink my water and keep my water at the side of my bed and just have that when I first get up? Do I do my, you know, my lemon water in the morning? All the choices that we have to make. What do I eat for breakfast? How long do I do it? Do I do my heart math before that? Every single choice we make can matter. And some of them are big enough that they accumulate and we end up with some serious problems if we're not careful over time. So that's what I'm here to share with you, is how you can make every choice count. Every choice counts. So you see what my first thing is in terms of healing from these things is go gluten-free. And then I put in the Dale Bredesen book because I absolutely love all the information in there. And you don't have to do the tens of thousands of dollars of testing that he recommends. A lot of it is you can just extract out the practical stuff, you know, the avoidance of pesticides and how that affects the brain, the avoidance of, you know, GMOs and gluten and, you know, unnecessary medications, etc. So we'll look to see, look at these slides to see what I want to make sure that you're aware of. And again, you play my video and you'll get some stuff. So those are the things. Yeah, I don't have many slides. So I just use this slide to go into each of these in more detail. Depression, anxiety, lack of focus, memory. Bipolar is really the both ways, right? So we call that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of thing, right? You're really good here, and then, well, actually, no, that's more schizophrenia, I think, or actually multiple personality disorder. But bipolar is when people go through periods of severe depression, and severe manic. I mean, they call it manic depressive disorder as well. It's like, if you know anybody in your life like that, you may want to slip them some B vitamins and clean up their diet and take them in for a few days and help them to clean it up. Bipolar is one of the most challenging diagnoses, and I have worked with folks who have reversed it with diligence, years and years and years of testing and changes, and they have to be really careful. And eventually I had at least one go off the medication, and the doctor just didn't believe it. We never have anybody go off bipolar medication. Not to say tell people to go off it, not to say if you're on it that you go off it, but it's possible. It's definitely possible. So they're in the state of manic, and she would literally ring up thousands and thousands of dollars on her credit card when she was in the manic state, because she was like, I'm on top of the world. I can do this. I'm going to do that. And she would just buy like crazy, and then she'd go, oh my God. So she literally, one of her coping mechanisms was to take her credit cards and give them to a friend, and only allow the friend to give her the credit card when she needed groceries. So there's some things that people need to do to protect themselves. Some people think of schizophrenia as that split personality, like, you know, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, the, what's that, the three, the something Faces of Eve, there was a movie on that, where this person actually has separate personalities, and they physically, there's changes in those personalities. Like, one personality, they don't have a peanut sensitivity, and another one they do. So it just really shows the effect of the mind and the brain and the neurotransmitters on how we physically manifest. So schizophrenia is more the delusional type of thing. There was a movie called A Beautiful Mind. Has anybody seen that movie? That guy was schizophrenic, right? He heard voices, he saw people, right? And there's another one like that where it was literally this guy was seeing, and you didn't find out till the end that it was all in his head, right? And they go into these stages where they're that way. Sometimes there's paranoia associated with schizophrenia, right? Like, everybody's out to get me. Everybody's out to get me. So anyway, those are the more serious things. But some of the simpler things that you may be experiencing from time to time or on a regular basis, that depression, anxiety, and a lot of times going along with the depression, anxiety, or the anxiety more than depression, is OCD, right? That obsessive compulsive, I've got to wipe the doorknob 5 times before I can walk out the door. I've got to do this, that, and the other thing. And I remember working with someone probably 10 years ago again, and she came in because she had really bad periods of depression during her cycle, and they wanted to put her on Prozac, and she didn't want to do it. And we looked at her, and I looked at her hormones, her sex hormones, and she had some weird patterns. I don't remember exactly what they were, but put her on some nutrients, got her on the good diet, nutrients. She lost a lot of the extra weight. And what happened was she called me, or she texted me, or whatever, a day. She goes, I can't believe it. You're not going to believe what I did yesterday. I'm like, okay, what'd you do? She said, I went to bed with dishes in the sink. And I'm thinking, I do that all the time. What's the big deal? But she says, I could never do that. If I had a party and I was up till 3 a.m, I'd stay up till 5 o'clock to make sure everything was crystal clear. She said, I went to bed with dishes in the sink. I am so far along in what's been going on. She was able to help that OCD, like have to do it right, have to do it perfectly. And I know that there are some folks that we work with in our programs that maybe not to that extent, and maybe not the OCD to the extent of, you know, never going out because you never clean the doorknob enough. But that's like the hypervigilant. There's a gene, and it's funny because my mother-in-law, as she aged, I went, she's got OCD. We never caught this before, but, you know, she couldn't throw away a newspaper unless she read it cover to cover, including the Target sale inserts. So she would literally sit at the dining room table reading the Target sale inserts from 6 months ago. So she was always behind because she can never catch up. She had to read all these things. And I said, I think she has OCD. And she collected the papers and all this stuff. And I remember saying to my husband one day in a fit of like, oh, you've got your mother's OCD gene, because he was doing something, you know, a little bit obsessive. And so when we got the genetic report back, he had the MAO, which is sex-linked, which means he only got that gene from his mother. And then he had like a VDR, which is a vitamin D receptor, and a COMT, which is related to dopamine and serotonin. And the text was, if you have this combination of these three, you'd have a tendency to OCD. I'm like, there you go. You got this from your mother. So there are some of those tendencies, right? And if you find yourself, the best thing to do is to watch as you see yourself doing it. You go, okay. And learn to laugh at yourself and not take it seriously. But know that there may be a neurotransmitter imbalance that can help you, so you don't have to wash your hands 15 times before going out, or, you know, when you're in public or whatever. Does that make sense? So there's a lot of this, and we'll talk about it in here, but to the extent you need it. For those of you who are in practitioner training, you know, we go through a whole lot more in there. Any questions on any of the other, any of the things that could go wrong with the brain and neurotransmitters? I do want to say this one thing, Parkinson's, right? Parkinson's, they're finding now that they think that one of the early signs of Parkinson's is chronic constipation that doesn't resolve with the normal stuff, like getting the liver working, you know, fiber in the diet, you know, abdominal massage and stuff, that it could be a sign of Parkinson's early on, because it's a lack of the dopamine in the intestinal tract helps us to have our peristalsis and our intestinal mobility. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. I don't say any of this stuff to scare you. I just want to educate you so you know what you're looking at, and that you're more motivated and inspired to really take the actions. So I think gluten-free, everybody that has any kind of brain or neurotransmitter stuff needs to do gluten-free, at least experiment with it for a year. I don't mean experiment for a month or, you know, 2 weeks or 6 weeks. It's been shown that those antibodies will reside and stay present in the system for up to 6 months, and for some longer, on average 6 months. Every time I say that to Dr. O'Brien, he'll say to me, least 6 months. When I say up to 6 months, he corrects me and he says, no, it's at least 6 months. So if you really want to get a good indication, 100% gluten-free for 6 months or longer. And I had one person who had an autoimmune disease called Sjogren's syndrome, and that causes dryness, dry mouth, dry eyes, and fatigue, you know, and some of the typical autoimmune type things. And we'd been working together, and I got her off of wheat, and she was mostly off of gluten, but occasionally she was having like spelt bread. And then she told me that she found this really good spelt bread substitute, and it was so good that she was eating a lot of it. And then she was saying, I'm more tired than usual. I have some joy. You know, she started to tell me some symptoms, and I said, how often are you eating that bread? And she told me it was, you know, once a week or once every 2 weeks, or, you know, twice a week sometimes. And I started asking her a question. I said, how willing are you to go 100% gluten-free? She goes, why? What makes you think? And I told her. She's, all right, I'm going to do it. So she went 100% gluten-free. And months later, she was dealing with her father's death, her mother's death. She was visiting with her mother. She was in hospice. She was there. And it was a lot of stress and strain, as you can imagine, staying up late, dealing with the family, dealing with her mother. And this is a person who really needed to get her 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night. And she had spent 3 days in a row where she only got 5 or 6 hours of sleep. And she's like, I don't understand this. I could never be so energetic and still be able to go with so little sleep. And she was one of these very inquisitives, like all of you guys. And she's questioning and scratching her head. And then she looked at her calendar, and it turned out it was 6 months almost to the day that she'd 100% given up gluten. This was a long time ago, maybe 8 years ago. And she's, to this day, she's still gluten-free 100% because she saw that it made such a difference in her energy. And now she has a full-time job. She just got promoted to supervisor. This was a woman that when I met her could not take a job. And she had told me that, you know, her kids had just graduated high school or college. I don't know what her kids were, but when they were in high school, she would go to the store, she would buy the groceries, she would then go lay down. Groceries are still in the car. She'd get up, take a nap, She'd get up, go get the groceries out of the car, so exhausted, put them on the counter, and then go back and take a nap. And then come back out and unpack the groceries, take a nap so that she had energy to deal with her kids when they came home from school. And now, you know, she's holding a full-time job. She gets promoted to supervisor. She does volunteer work at the church. She does all sorts of stuff. So this stuff is reversible, but, you know, a lot of people don't take it seriously. Like, oh yeah, I'm mostly gluten-free. That little bit can be aggravating your system enough to keep the autoimmune disease going or to keep the leaky gut going. So it's really quite remarkable. There's The End of Alzheimer's in Dr. O'Brien's book, You Can Fix Your Brain. He's got a lot of really good stuff in there if you want to really, you know, dive deep. And then the progress room. So any questions about what can go wrong? Okay, go to part four. Food, nutrients, and herbs. This is the fun part. This is where people usually like to start. Hey, you do nutrition. What herb can I take for this? What nutrients should I take for that? When in reality, as you guys know, it's a foundation. So let's look. Let me see how long this one is. 20 minutes, so not too bad. All right. So we're talking here about the 8 essential amino acids. Tyrosine is conditionally essential, so sometimes you'll see it listed as 9. Remember, tyrosine, dopamine, norepinephrine, what it leads to. Then we talk in here about the various neurotransmitters and how they lead to the specific neurotransmitters. So phenylalanine goes to tyrosine then goes to dopamine, epinephrine, and thyroid hormone as well. We talked about tryptophan goes to serotonin and melatonin. Glutamic acid goes to GABA. GABA is a neurotransmitter in and of itself. And then taurine goes to GABA as well. So it gives you some ideas, but also the nutrient deficiencies that can lead to neurotransmitter imbalances. And we've already talked about most of these, the B vitamins on the left-hand side, and then also important is vitamin C, D, and E. D seems to be important for everything, right? If you've done a blood test and you've got low D, supplement until you get it up at least to 60. I'd love to see it 75 to 90 to 100, especially if you have an autoimmune condition or you have symptoms, brain symptoms. E's an antioxidant, so it's important for all of this. Chromium to keep the blood sugar balanced. And then iron and choline, because they're cofactors in some of these. Choline is super important for memory. Someone wrote somewhere, now I can't remember where it was, whether it was on Facebook recently or not, I just saw it at a glance today, that they we'll talk about it next week. It's one of our people in here, Susanna, said she has the APOE44 gene, but she also has the genes that are making it so that she's glowing choline, which is important for memory, acetylcholine, and the parasympathetic. And that in order to get enough choline that she's been recommended, she needed 8 egg yolks a day. Well, if you have the APOE44, which means you shouldn't be taking in saturated animal fats, and you need choline, 8 egg yolks is not going to be the way to go, right? So phosphatidylcholine is a supplement you could take, or sunflower lecithin, right? And Suzanne, if you're listening, your question had to do with you were taking the liquid sunflower lecithin, and there's just so much you can take. You can also do it as a powder, and there's ways that you can sneak it in. In fact, you can sneak it into a pie crust, pizza crust, which we're going to do on Friday, tomorrow. A lot of things that you can do with that sunflower lecithin. So sunflower lecithin, if ever I've sat with you and gone through some of your stuff and said, you probably need some sunflower lecithin. I do that a lot when I'm going through the genetics, because there's a specific set, PEMT is the genetic marker, if you happen to know that you have it or don't have it, that says that you're going to need more choline, that you have problems with phospholipids, and sunflower lecithin is a good selection there. Here are some of the things that serotonin, and for, you know, if you tend to like, you're depressed and any of these give you relief, then it's possibly a serotonin. And these are the Prozac, Paxil, Effexor, Celexa are specific selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Chocolate, you know, if you're depressed and you eat chocolate and your depression goes away, it could be serotonin. It could be, it could also be dopamine. Okay, so these are some of the things. And a lot of folks, you know, just you're like craving sweets and starch. A lot of it is because you're trying to get some serotonin going to have you feel good. And that's why sweet starches and even chocolate can help us to feel better. Although chocolate does have some calming neurotransmitter precursors in there as well. And then some of the amino acid solutions, 5-HTP or tryptophan, we had that discussion with Jay earlier. And then vitamin B6, tyrosine, but we also talked about the other B vitamins as well. And then there's dopamine. So we go through all of that with dopamine. You can see some overlap. So, you know, if there's certain things on both sheets, it might be hard, but there may be one or two that you're saying, yeah, that really helps me. It might be this. That's in addition to taking the neurotransmitter assessment. If you wanted to get Braverman's book and look at it there, and also knowing what your amino acid status is. Here's another clue with phenylalanine, because it's the, you know, the precursor to tyrosine, which is the precursor to dopamine. You know, if you have sensitivity to pain, like low endorphins, right? You tend to be super sensitive to pain. Some people are like, you did what? You dropped that on your toe and didn't even know your toe was broken and didn't even go to the doctor or didn't take any pain relief. Eh, it was okay. Or somebody else who like, they stick their finger with the glucose meter and they, yeah, right? So sensitivity, it's not like just a, you know, oh, you're a baby, just own up to it. It could be that there's lack of endorphins, right? Or low endorphins. Endorphins you can get more of, going back to Jenny's question earlier, you get more endorphins when you exercise. We know that. So that's part of why it makes you feel better as well, is those endorphins. And then there's GABA. So we go through those. Again, you know, to help you to look at the list and say, wow, this never helped, but this did. Maybe it's a GABA thing. And also, I would say, symptom-wise, if you also have problems with digesting fat, it could be taurine deficiency. If you have low stomach acid, problems digesting fat, and that, you know, that anxiety that goes with low GABA, then that could be related to taurine. You can test it. The cool part about this is, you know, amino acids aren't that expensive to just test it and see. So if you get relief from depression or anxiety or OCD symptoms or memory by adding some of these nutrients, then you maybe are on the right track. Somebody called Trudy Scott, she's a colleague of mine, and she does a program where she actually takes people through, you know, do the testing, but then look at specific amino acids and do it with amino acid supplementation and start with small amount, keep going up and see if you get relief at all in the moment. And you have to be really astute and tuned in. But if you do, then it's likely that it's one of those deficiencies there. So it's quite an interesting approach that she takes. Balance, you know, omega-3s are critical. Omega-3s are critical for cell membranes, right? And we need to have good cell membranes. Well, the neurotransmitters that are passing through the synapse, you have to have good cell membranes for the reception of those. So we really have to make sure that the omega-3 balance, if you haven't already gone through in the body freedom section on diet, and it's a good reminder because there's so much stuff in the program, you might have been through it and forgot about it. There's a spreadsheet that helps you to get your omega-3-6 in balance. Okay? And those are some of the foods. Toxins, you can't say enough, and Bredesen talks about that in his book, Blood Sugar Balance, right? Blood sugar balance is, you look at Alzheimer's, they're talking about it being type 3 diabetes because you're not getting enough sugar into the brain because of insulin resistance. So that's it. And then if we go back to this page, there's some actions, right? Go gluten-free. And then we have a lot of resources for you in gluten-free if you're not already doing it. We also had a bonus with Maya, who's one of our members, and she does this, she helps us this every year for us. And you can get access, if you missed it live, you can get access to the recordings on the recording page. But she's extremely gluten intolerant, and she's developed strategies to really be careful. And another person who had a lot of menopause symptoms and other stuff going on that I suspected gluten-free, and she said she'd go gluten-free. And she was getting better, but not as much better as we really wanted her to. And so I said, are you 100% gluten-free? She said, well, yeah, as best I can be. What about when you go out? Well, you know, I don't really check. Do you ask questions? Do you ask about soy sauce? Do you ask about some of the hidden sources of gluten? Well, I just don't want to be a pain. I said, okay, let's get a gluten intolerance test. So she went and got us, there's a test that Entero Labs does. You poop in a cup, you send it off, and they find out if there's any gluten antibodies in your stool. She showed up positive for it. She also decided at that point to do their full test, which was they also test the genetics for it. And she did, and it came back positive. The genetic part came back positive. And her reason for doing the genetic part was she has kids, and she wanted to find out if there was a chance that they would have a problem, and she wanted to test them. So she did that, and she got really meticulous about it, 100%, and her plateau lifted, and she got better and better. And so she tested all her kids, put her kids on a strict gluten-free diet, and they got better. And she was a health coach. She had graduated from IIN and was starting a health coaching practice. After that experience with her and her family and seeing the behavior changes in her kids, the focus improvements, her own health, she decided to devote her health coaching practice to teaching people how to survive doing gluten-free. And I just thought that was beautiful. If you want to listen to that, I think we did a two-part interview, didn't we, Lynn? A two-part interview with her on the Blog Talk Radio, which you can find on our blog. You just go dr.emery.com/blog and look up gluten. I'm not sure exactly where it is, but it's just a really nice little reminder that it can be a problem if it's just a small exposure every couple of weeks.
So I've got a question.
Yeah.
It's maybe going back a little bit, but when we're taking, so I've been supplementing with amino acids, including, you know, essential amino acids. Should I be taking those? I've been trying to take them separate and apart from like my protein powders.
Yeah, it's best to do that because they'll compete. It's actually best to do it with your highest carbohydrate meal. So whether it's a salad, whether you're having carrots, you know, anything like that, take the amino acids, the separate ones with the carbs so that they don't compete with other amino acids to get in. Yeah, definitely.
Well, okay, if I were taking my aminos and then I'm going to follow with my protein drink, how much time should I wait for those aminos to, are we talking 30 minutes, 15 minutes, or are we talking an hour, you know?
I would probably be thinking more like 30 minutes to an hour.
Okay.
I would do the aminos first.
Right.
If you do the protein powder first, it may be longer because it's more complicated. But if you're doing, like, say you're doing 3 amino acids or 1 amino acid, tyrosine, tryptophan, whatever, I would say at least 30 minutes.
Okay.
So, you know, and maybe 60 if you tend to have sluggish
digestion. On proteins, I've been looking at branched chain BCAA or whatever it is. Yep. Is that good or doesn't matter? Or?
Well, the branch chain, if you're looking at taking amino acids, it depends on what you're taking them for. So branch chain, those can get converted to glucose. So it's a source of energy. So a lot of athletes will take those.
Okay.
You do have to be careful.
Probably should avoid that if you had a blood sugar problem.
There's mixed reviews on it. So given, you know, your history with blood sugar stuff and your eyes and stuff, I'd probably not do branch chains by themselves.
Okay.
Unless you're like in a heavy duty athletic thing and you want to replenish right after. That's a good thing.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. So here's a downloadable, right? I gave you some links of some things that you can get, but here's a downloadable summary of the different nutrients for the different parts of the nervous system and some of the herbs as well, right? So St. John's wort, you know, mild to moderate depression has been shown to be effective, not for everybody, right? So you have to figure out who is it going to be good for? Is it good? Kava can be very calming. if you can tolerate the taste. It has this astringent type taste on your tongue. We actually have a kava bar here in Austin. So instead of people going into the coffee bar and sitting around, they sit around drinking kava. Lemon balm, very calming and soothing, and you can grow it easily in your yard and even grow it in your house. You don't even have to take it internally necessarily. You can just keep it, like if you're having trouble falling asleep, keep it near your bed, keep a plant in your room and just pinch off the leaves between your fingers and use it, or lemon balm essential oil works really well. And then milky oat is another one. I don't think there's a problem with gluten intolerance and the milky oat plant. I haven't really seen much in the way of evidence that that's a problem, but milky oat is like, there's an herb that's made from the, when oat comes to its ripening, there's a little milky kind of spot at the top. Lynn, do you have something to say about that?
Well, yeah, it's not, because they use all the different parts of the oat plant for different things. So like oat straw you'll hear and milky oat. But as far as I know, it's not a gluten problem. But actually what I wanted to talk about was St. John's wort.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and we actually talked about this during that weekend seminar. It's not an antidepressant, and it's really been wrongly presented as that. It actually has... it's just relaxing and calming. It is not an antidepressant. And so it has kind of a heart brain connection where it just mm-hmm. calms you down.
Yeah, but and that's why it works. It doesn't work for severe depression. But when you get into that like nice bliss state, right, in a mild depression, it can be helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually a couple of others that are fairly decent for that. Motherwort is mm-hmm. really good, and that can actually help with sleep. And now I can't remember the other one. Maybe it's because I need it. But I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah. Yep, there's definitely others, I wouldn't say. In the practitioner, in the NEPT program, in the sleep section, and then the nerve and nervous system section, we have a lot more in depth. We are going to be doing a course that I'm putting together, and Lynn has been going to be recruited to help me for our practitioners in the spring, hopefully. You know, I was thinking late spring after sweet spot, that is going to go through like the therapeutic use of certain herbs, like the top dozen or two dozen herbs. I haven't figured out the exact number, but really stuff that's practical, that's easily available, that, you know, not stuff that's going to be like you have to be careful, like belladonna or something like that, but stuff that are nutritive herbs that can affect physiology. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So when digestion is compromised and you're eating proteins, but you're not feeling like you're really, like you said, maybe you don't have enough stomach acid, or you're not properly getting these individual aminos, which we see, you know, makes sense how critical they are. Would a protein powder supplement address that best, or taking like an amino acid supplement that has all of the, you know, like one that's got everything?
That's a great question. So the protein powder, some of them are fermented and pre-digested, so they're more bioavailable, and some of them are not, right? So if you're really truly having a serious problem, you know, I usually like to start with a protein powder and see how it goes. But if that doesn't seem to be moving the needle, then an amino acid supplement. Now, here's the deal with amino acid supplements. They taste really bad. They taste awful if you get a powder. I did find one from Kine. I'll have to find it. I bought some because I saw it advertised on Facebook. It was advertised by people I trusted. Let me think about the name. But it was a lemon lime flavor. And I'm like, how good can it be? So I ordered the tablets. I've never seen one in capsules. I think they're mostly in tablets. But there's a tablet that breaks down easily. And then I ordered the other one, the powder. And I have experimented with amino acids in the past. We're taking it like before a run, like 20 minutes before a run. and it really helps to provide the body some protein there. So if you do go into too heavy an exercise and the cortisol gets released, it doesn't break down your muscles, it breaks down the amino acids you just gave it. Mm-hmm. And also the powder. And I didn't think the powder tasted all that bad. I gave the tablets to my son because I really was ordering it for him to see if it's something he was into, this heavy duty exercise kick and wanting extra protein. But I didn't know that he would taste thing, and it wasn't so palatable that I would say, here, try this, because he tends to be sensitive that way. I just gave him the capsules or the tablets instead. But yeah, there's one I ordered I would not recommend anybody ever order. It was so bad. I bought it like 5 years ago and it's still sitting with one or two servings out of it. You know, I'm pretty, you know, bold about it. Who cares how it tastes? But it was pretty bad and they couldn't disguise the flavor. But this one, I'll find it and I'll post in the ERC Facebook group to say, hey, Rita Marie, can you post the name of that protein powder for me? But it had really good reviews and it was used a lot with, you know, paleo and ketogenic diets. And I thought it was palatable, right? And for you, I would never want you to get capsules or tablets of anything because you're so sensitive. You may have to start with a pinch and then move up a little and move up a little. So powder would be the best approach for people who are super sensitive.
So one powder that I use is made by NOW now. It's called, I think it's called this Amino 7 or Amino 7 Essentials. That one doesn't taste too bad.
So now I'll go find it. I don't know if mine has the full 22 or if it's just the essentials. I don't recall that. But this one that I had gotten that was the full 22 years ago, bad. I mean, I could probably get some capsules and put it in there and take it that way, but
I put a teaspoon of like a berry powder in it, but now that I think about it, gee, I wonder if that's competing with anything. But you told me that.
No, it wouldn't compete. It'd be fine. Yeah, as long as it's not shooting your blood sugar.
Take it with a carb, so.
Yeah, so that's the ideal way to take it. Absolutely. Yeah. All right.
Methionine powder tastes kind of weird, kind of metallic like.
Which does?
Methionine.
Oh, methionine. It's very sulfury.
Yeah, I'm taking methionine, lysine, and glycine in addition to 7.
Okay. How long have you been taking them for?
One month.
Have you noticed any?
I'm getting in the weeds on my testing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Nutrient assessments are important. So you can do your paper and pencil ones. You know, you can spend $600 and get the NutriVal. You get a lot of good information by just using the clinical signs and symptoms. So if you were to go into these assessments, you'll see, I don't know if this is the link to the online one or not, but I'd highly recommend if you're having any just to see, especially if you decide to add stuff in, you test and then you do it again and then you test again, then you know, symptomatically at least you're improving. You can actually print out the, I think if you print out the PDF, it's like a checklist you can keep around. So you don't have to go through the whole thing. You can just look at, this is just the essential fats and protein. So this gives you an idea of vitamin and minerals overall, fats, and then the amino acids. But if you go to that one.
Can I just pop in with a comment?
Sure.
At least this is what I share with those in my group or that I work with. Frequently when you're in any of the programs, you'll see, like you post, these are all the nutrients, and I'll get, well, where do I get something that has all of them? You may not need all of them. So this is why I'm always like, do these assessments, see what you need.
See what you really are more likely to be needing. So this breaks it out. So you can just print this out and keep it in your binder as a reference thing, and you don't have to go through and do the whole thing again, just do the individual section when you're wanting to see if what you've been doing has shifted or what you really need. So there's the B vitamins. Then I have B1, B2, B3, B5, B6. So all of the ones related to neurotransmitters are here to get a sense of which ones, right? B and E and K. So it's pretty comprehensive and it just helps you to quickly without spending a ton of money, because you don't want to go back. You get a NutriVal test at the beginning. You don't want to go back and do that again for a long time because it's expensive. You don't want to just go, oh, I'm going to take this and let's see where it is in 3 months. Unless you're loaded, you know, many people are, and plenty of money in the bank to invest. But, you know, a $600 test every 3 months can get pretty pricey over time, right? So this way you can look at these and be able to tell. Okay? Let's see. And... oh, good. So I gave you a link to that. Was I going through this with? I think I was going through it with Jenny today, right? The link to that page. With the, yeah. So on here, you're going to see, show you real quick, this and give your body an oil change. If you're having any problems with the brain or inflammation at all, it's a good idea to read through this. A lot of it you probably have already done. But what I'm going here for is... there's an EFA score, so that's in the general. Here we go. Track omega-3 versus 6, and that's a really important ratio. Omega-3, especially DHA, is super important for your brain health. EPA is important for inflammation, and inflammation in the brain can lead to any of these problems. So you've got the Excel sheet, so you can go in and you can just play. You can put numbers in, and you can play around and say, whoa, I'm a little... I've got too much omega-6 today, or I've got, not enough omega-3. And so if you look at it, I'll just open the PDF version of it. But you have an actual Excel sheet that you can play with. And if you put your foods in here, like you can actually, so this is a chart. And you can, yeah, over here, you can put in your quantity. So if you're looking at a recipe or making a meal, you could say, okay, I'm putting in an ounce of flax and a half an ounce of hemp and, you know, 2 ounces of sesame. And you can look at your ratio and go, whoa, that's way too much omega-6. How can I balance that? And then you can go back and change it. And then you can make your salad dressing or your whatever it is you're making. Just shift it. I remember putting a recipe in there. I was all excited about this recipe, but I'm like, oh my God, it's like a 12:1 omega-6:3. So I did some simple things. Like I took out the almonds and replaced them with walnuts, or I took out part of the almonds and replaced them with walnuts. And I added some chia to the recipe and I got in my ratio. So it helps you to take control of your foods when you're making it. And in here, I also give you some sample recipes. So there's my omega-3 rich chia pudding. And that's got, yeah, so the 6:3 ratio is 0.86, which is pretty good, right? We want it to be 3:1 or less. So this recipe is my peppermint patties. They're yummy. And they have a 2.47, which is under the 3. So it's really a good source of omega-3. And it's yummy, and it's a dessert type of thing. And then I have this veggie crisps. So we're going to do some of that in the Kitchen Magic on Saturday. We're going to do some of the dehydrated stuff, but this is a veggie crisp recipe where it's a 0.81. So you eat this, and then, okay, if you have a handful of almonds, you probably balance it out, right? Or if you put almond butter on the cracker, you test it. You see, oh, yeah, I can put almond butter on this cracker and still keep it within the legal ratio. So it's a fun sheet. All right. And then, you know, really starting your day with an energy drink or a chia porridge are really helpful along the way. There's extras on here. So there's some videos with some recipes, and omega-3 rich recipes are important. And this is not the brain one. This is the omega-3. I'm like, wow, I didn't know I put all that there. That's the brain one. So there's a lot of good stuff there on the omega-3 stuff as well. All right. Optimizing the protein. We just talked about that with Jay a little bit about the amino acids. Liquid minerals can be helpful for these pathways. Hydration, typical. You've got to have good hydration. Antioxidant-rich organic diet. And your progress journal. So there's a lot of reiteration of a lot of the basics, but I think when you learn the basics and then you learn where they apply and how they might apply to you, it's going to give you more insight. incentive to do it. And then we have part five. And part five is your lifestyle factors. And, you know, these are all the things that can affect you in terms of your brain, like the things that you're eating, the things that you're, you know, having. A lot of people have brain trauma, right? And it's a lot of the stuff that you can do and how the lifestyle factors affect. We don't have time to go through this whole thing, but go through this thing on your own, right? Go through this whole process, this whole module. It's a long one, and you'll learn all about this. Stress levels, brain exercises, emotional recharge, protect your neurotransmitters, sleep and all that, and then some extra resources. All right. So I do need to go. I have a call coming up. I'm going to just text with my team, but I want to, let's see. Okay. Got it. Okay. You know, and these are just some of your basic stuff. If you're on medication, you should be checking with the practitioner that prescribed it before getting off of it, eating organic and growing your own food. There's, the neurotoxic ingredients we have listed here, the caffeine, minimize alcohol or avoid it, the processed grain. So this is all like a really good summary, like 20 different steps or 19 different steps that you can take to help to build a healthy brain. And it's all outlined in the slides. How long is this presentation? I think it's like longer. 20 minutes, okay? So I'm gonna stop my share. If you guys have any questions about any of this, post it in the Facebook group or on our next call. Was this helpful? Was it too much? No, it's good? All right, good. So go through it now. Now, this is your your kind of a intro. Go through it, and if you have questions as you go through it, post them or bring them to a call. Okay?
Right, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your good questions. I unmuted everybody. It's going to sound a little weird, but bye. Thank you for being here.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Welcome back. Thank you, Marie. Bye-bye.